Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. This is Janine, and you're listening to Lunch with Loudon. Coffee Talk Radio shows are part of the Coffee Party Be the Media Project. You can join our team by going to www.coffeepartyusa.com/volunteer. Well, welcome to sort of a spontaneously generated show and topic today. And we have Debbie Lynn Molyneux to thank for that. Debbie Lynn, how are you today?
I am doing fabulous. I think the computer's up and working, so I should be on the board with you today. But, I'm enjoying all of the feedback we're getting on this topic.
Exactly. And that topic is hoarding cash vs. spreading the wealth. And let me give you a little background as we get started here. Because we've had so many comments on so many pages, I know that there's going to be folks already in the queue. So here's the backstory. Debbie Lynn posted a meme on Join the Coffee Party Movement Facebook page Monday, and I'm going to read it to you so I get it literally correct. If a man has an apartment stacked to the ceiling with newspapers, we call him crazy. If a woman has a trailer full of cats, we call her nuts. But when people pathologically hoard so much cash that they impoverish the entire nation, we put them on the cover of Fortune magazine and pretend they are role models. That's a quote from B. Lester and was posted at Free Your Mind and Think. So Debbie Lynn also included a quote on this post. It was from the script of Hello, Dolly, and I'll read that to you too. Money, pardon the expression, is like manure. It's not worth a thing unless it's spread around, encouraging young things to grow. So then she posted the simple question, how would you spread it around? And I'm sure she's inferring, how would you spread the manure/money around? And the post never said anything about taxes or giving money to the government, but most of the 300-plus comments on Facebook that day assumed that's what she meant, that she was talking about government taxes, whatever. Today we're going to pose that question again with some additional commentary and hope you'll chime in with your point of view. The number is 646-929-2495. That'll get you to the host queue. And remember to press 1 if you want to speak. And I'm so thrilled to already see one here today. So how would you encourage young things to grow? Or the quote from Hello, Dolly. Whose responsibility is it to nurture new things? There was a shocking number of comments to that post, like, got a job, liberal trash talk, socialism, communism, get over your sense of entitlement. I presume they meant worker entitlement, not corporate entitlement. And why should we give more money to government? Here's an example. JM said, and I'll read again, socialism and redistribution of wealth doesn't work. Don't understand why people waste so much time and effort envying and discriminating against others who earn more money than they do. My advice to young people is to work hard and stay focused on the things you can control. Don't become dependent on somebody else or the government to give you what you want. Learn to earn things independently. Stop concerning yourself with what others earn or have, and you will be much happier. Okay, so why do people jump to discussing taxes and entitlements and dependency? I have some theories, you know, like talking points that abound these days are designed to defend corporate tactics and imply the only way to spread the wealth is through taxes. The idea that business and industry use to supply its own fuel for fire for growth is missing totally from that conversation. There's no notion about how corporations should spend their money, let alone how governments should spend their money, right? So note to self, business used to reinvest money in themselves, for those folks who are concerned about that. But then there are comments like this one from HM. I love seeing the comments about get out there and earn it. there has to be jobs. How are jobs created? Demand for said item. Where does demand come from? People should have money. If the majority of money is hoarded by a small percent of our nation, there isn't a lot of money being actively circulated. That makes the economy suck. I can't even change jobs without taking a 10K hit to my salary. Why? Because there aren't enough jobs and there are people willing to take anything to get a job. But with less income, we can't spend as much to put back into the economy. Therefore, demand shrinks, job markets shrink. And yet we keep hearing the same talk, go get a job. Yeah. My employer keeps laying people off and expecting more work from their current employees. I don't see many jobs. Well, so there are kind of the two sides of this question, or what appeared to be the two sides of the question on Monday. And it seems like the tax versus hoarding conundrum has its roots in the fact that, you know, when we talk money, we're talking capitalism, and capitalism flourishes on investment. But apparently the return on investment for private money, which is the money that's being stockpiled, mostly by the globals, by the way, is not worth the effort. Question becomes, why? I think that there's a lot I could say at this point, but, you know, I'm just going to jump to you, Debbie Lynn.
Okay.
I'll come back to some other things I wanted to say later, but so tell me your response to this post, the comments you got, how that went for you.
Yeah, well, it was really interesting for me to note that how quickly people jump to the profit is good or evil and spread the wealth as the liberal fantasy and people should get a job, et cetera. It was just like in a heartbeat. There wasn't any like consideration for like what actually needs to be done. We have an assumption of corporate versus government, even though we were asking what you would do and what should we invest in, whether it was private or government funding. The larger question is what needs to be done. You know, there's a lot of breakdowns in our society right now and a lot of things that we could do. And I was also reminded that what we measure is most often used to define our success. And so in most business and corporate culture, success is defined as profit or cash. And in government, I'm not sure how we measure success, maybe public benefit. But, you know, this is a huge public debate right now. People who want less government interference or more government regulation, depending on their viewpoint of corporate good or evil or government good and evil, it's this false dichotomy that serves to distract me from figuring out what actually needs to be done. And what would happen if we started measuring? You got something here, Janine?
No, that's okay. I thought you paused. I'll wait.
Yeah, you know, what would happen, you know, if we started actually measuring success by standards of a new type of corporation called a B Corp? This is a private enterprise but public benefit company structure. And I just wanted to read real quick. They have a very quick declaration of interdependence that B Corps take, and there's over 900 of them in the country right now. And it says, we envision a new sector of the economy which harnesses the power of private enterprise to create public benefit. This sector is comprised of a new type of corporation, the B Corporation, which is purpose-driven and creates benefit for all stakeholders, not just shareholders. As a member of this emerging sector and as entrepreneurs and investors in B Corporations, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that we must be the change we seek in the world, that all business ought to be conducted as if people and place mattered, that through their products, practices, and profits, businesses should aspire to do no harm and benefit all. And to do so requires that we act with the understanding that we are each dependent upon one another and thus responsible for each other and future generations. And so, you know, on a more personal level, first of all, I love the B Corporation Declaration of Interdependence. I think it's great, and it's how I personally am motivated. I know not everyone is. But also on a more personal level, I think that we are seeing a few people who just kind of like drop out of our cash is king measurement of success. If cash or bank balance or the stuff we own equates to our influence and our self-determination, then some people realize they cannot win and they give up. How does this contribute to the haves and the have-nots mentality? So while I personally believe we each create our own life and we make choices thinking that we'll succeed, how often do we actually take a look at what success is? For me, it's friends, family, a comfortable life, and being as good of a steward to the planet as possible. Sometimes it's as good of a steward to the planet as is convenient, and I am aware of that, my own hypocrisy there. I look at where I'm supported and where I'm not. Current culture does not support my definition of success, but I do feel happier as a result of using my own. So I want everybody who's on the call today to pretend that we are kings and queens for the day. We get to say what happens, and it does. What would you change or eliminate?
Oh, precisely. As a matter of fact, we sort of reframed the question today and sort of shared it out there in the blogosphere. And the answers we got today were very different from the answers that you got Monday. There was one on Bridge the Divide that said, pick a single university and pay off all the student loans and watch the community bloom like a desert after a spring rain. Isn't that beautiful? But that was, you know, what would you nurture with this manure money, to continue the analogy, right?
And I love the equation.
I know. Manure money, I like that. And someone on the Join the Coffee Party movement said, I would nurture education and entrepreneurship. One of my favorites, let's see if I can find it, was On the Rant, a group I belong to. And let's see what he said. I'll give you initials. It's EK. And it was quite an answer. I would develop projects that require a large part of the community to be involved. I'd go through the school programs and find if there were any students that couldn't be included in the activity because of cost, and I'd pay for them. I'd embellish the Wheels for Meals program and give people a steak for dinner at least twice a week. That's huge. I'd lobby my local government to increase taxes on the wealthy and corporations. I'd put more money into the family union. I'd help provide social interaction groups that would help families navigate society while providing the families with their financial needs. I'd start an electric car program that would allow people to change their home and vehicles using solar and wind power. I'd fund programs to provide success for drug addictions. And that's just the icing on the cake. There's so much more that could be done with the wealth in this country than making sure CEOs get another vacation home. Ding, ding, ding. There's my favorite post of the day. What do you think of that one, Debbie Lynn?
You know, I think that's great. And we get into the tussling about how does that happen. And we have some very wonderful philanthropists in this country who generously donate from their fortunes to do things like this. And I think that that's great. And how do we get more of them? That is my question.
Well,
if we want to avoid the evils of taxation, so to speak, and I'm not saying they're evil, but it's a meme that's out there. How do we create more generous philanthropists in this country who have great wealth?
Well, and, you know, the real purpose I felt like of your post was to say, if this was not an issue, if the who was going to pay and what it was going to cost was not the issue, what do you see missing in our in American society today? What would you do with manure money? What is it you want to nurture? So we have a caller from area code 714. I'm going to open the line. He's been patiently waiting since 10 minutes before the show started. So I'm opening up your mic now. Hi, welcome to Lunch with Loudon. Is this George?
Yeah, this is George.
Excellent. So,
can you guys hear me?
We can hear you perfectly.
Awesome. I'm on a computer phone, so there may be a little delay, but I can hear you guys perfectly, and it seems like you guys can hear me perfectly. So, just a slight delay, so just a little warning.
It's all good.
So George, what would you change? How would you spread this around?
Well, basically, looking from a point of view of economics, and I consider myself an expert amateur economist, I know that your questions can get emotional and touch people at different levels because, you know, it seems like they have a stake in it. I mean, but looking from a standpoint of economics, paper money is worthless. And you're right, your title is absolutely on the mark. I mean, it's manure. So if we wanted to spread manure around to nurture and grow things so that our economy improves, there's tons of things that we're doing wrong. Just from the GDP equation of basic macroeconomics or even microeconomics, you know, we have consumer spending. So you guys have talked about, you know, if we don't have jobs, there's no money to spend. This economy is driven by spending. Also, investments by people like you and me, private citizens. But if there's no money, we cannot, you know, invest or even do any sort of investment like buying homes or starting a business. And the small businesses is, you all know, is the backbone of the economy. Also, in private by corporations, we know factually that sitting corporations are really in cold hush that are just sitting there being hoarded. And you guys made the example of somebody stacking old newspapers would be called hoarder. And also, you know, government spending. All of these are spending, and it's just crazy how everything's just being tilted towards all the manure is being tilted towards just a few up in the ladder of economic success, if you want to call it. And so there's a chokehold right now of this manure spreading easily as it was before in the boom years or in the good years of economics. So the way I see it, if I had manure to spread around, I would start with looking at the consumer. How can we help the consumer? How can we encourage businesses to invest? They're not investing as they used to. I know they're complaining about taxes, but they're not. I mean, the super wealthy are complaining about taxes, but we're at pre-Clinton, not even at Clinton levels of era taxation. I mean, I'm not sure where the confusion lies. I mean, it's so clear what we need to do, but yet we're not doing it because of the special interests. So that's my take on it. So if we didn't have a stronghold on money and I was hoarding $1 trillion, I would actually nurture it because I know money is just an instrument to cause things to grow in the economy. And that includes people. So education and entrepreneurship are the cornerstones of what we value and what we should value and what we should be building, regardless of who that person is. Anyway, that's my take.
Can be heard.
Oh, shoot. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Oh, my gosh. I just went on through a beautiful soliloquy, and nobody heard any of it. I can't believe it. I disconnected from my computer somehow. Oh, my gosh. Well,
I will reserve any comments until you've had a chance to repeat yourself. I'm going to mute myself.
Okay, thanks a lot. Oh, my gosh. I was so inspired. And going on and on. Well, basically, here's what I was talking about. My apologies to those who couldn't hear. Blog Talk has its weaknesses, and this is one of them. So I was sort of connecting the dots between the folks who are overly concerned about protecting the rights and profitability of corporations and not concerned about the rights and profitability of human beings, because it's really, for me, very uncomfortable to discuss to try to discuss the economy without talking about the socioeconomic considerations, because the economy doesn't occur in a vacuum. It occurs in a continuum, in a global continuum for sure, but what we're talking about here today is the American socioeconomic experience. So on the one hand, we have children going hungry, the homeless, you know, looking for a place to even park their tent. And then on the other side of the equation, we have immense wealth insecurity. So we got food insecurity on one side of the equation and wealth insecurity on the other. The pattern of corporations not paying taxes and going after public money in the form of tax concession, subsidy, and infrastructure matching is well established. Despite the fact that no analysis done to date that I've been able to find, if you can find it, put it in the chat room, no analysis of tax incentives, whether they're federal, state, or local, shows any sustainable impact on jobs, taxable income from individuals or community prosperity once the cost of the tax concession is factored in. So with the exception of very small, very young business, most businesses do not benefit from most economic development. It's short-term, it is not long-term, and is not sustainable. And yet we pour money into this. So who are the beneficiaries of economic development dollars? Well, apparently not the right people. Even though the Wall Street Journal has studied the congressional budget and determined that while the corporate tax rate may be 35%, making us high among the nations, our effective tax rate is like 12%, a very low rate among developed nations. And yet what do we hear? What is it going to take to invest American dollars back into the American cash flow? The very notion that business should worry about its financial contribution to its home country is fading, being replaced by global well-being speak that in truth translates to justification of corporate profit. Translations don't look to big, especially global business, to do the investing in our future. So who will invest in providing food for the hungry, education for the young, opportunity for the older? Whose job is that? It's a whole different question. And I bet, let's see, Bob, you're live. Your mic is live. What do you think?
I think the whole system is sort of screwed up. I'm not sure what can be done. It's obvious that the interest in wealth doesn't have much to do with societal well-being. And the disconnect between personal wealth and well-being, except for health, there's just a completely, totally disconnect, and it's irresponsible. I need to do more of my homework, and I need to listen more before I can make much more of an intelligent comment. You know, I don't want to regurgitate what I feel. I'd rather respond to other people's thoughts. I'm going to mute myself.
Excellent, excellent. So, you know, I think when we were having technical
difficulties. I have something here, Jean.
Okay.
Yeah, I have something to go off here. One of the things that occurs to me, you know, that as we've kind of developed as a nation is we went from having, being in an aristocratic society when this country was first founded, where there was a sense of a stewardship of, like, if you were the lord of the manor, so to speak, your charge was to make sure that everybody that was on your property was cared for, even, you know, they did their jobs, and as a result, then the estate flourished. And we came over here to this country and became a little bit more egalitarian. But there was still a gentrification, a group of men at the time who were like watching out for us, so to speak, and hence we have the Electoral College. As we have adopted and embraced, a larger number of people have gone to the meritocracy-based system where it's supposed to be, everybody earns their own way and we reward on merits. It's become a lot more about me and mine. And I'm doing this, and some of this I think is from Ayn Rand as well, with libertarian thoughts about, nobody should be taking money that I have earned from me. I need to be able to have complete control and sovereignty over what I earn. And it's gotten kind of off, if you will, from this spirit of like we all succeed together, versus this is my success and you can't, and I'm not sharing it with you, whoever you is, the other. And I think this is something that we haven't like really looked at in our country of like, how is it that, how are we interdependent with each other? And what is it that we need? How can we create or help identify that spirit of generosity that seems to be missing for me?
Well, I think while we were having technical difficulties, I read off some more things that people said that they would do if they had this manure money to spread around. I would nurture education and entrepreneurship. I would do microfunding, half of Kickstarter and half of Indiegogo, and donate to the arts. I would contribute to education inspired by creativity, leading to adult experiences enabling change and advancement. I would give the homeless a place to live. No child would go hungry. Another person said I would fund sports so low-income kids can once again participate in activities that build character, discipline, love of community, and leadership. I mean, there is no shortage of things that people shared that they would be willing to do if they had that asset, right? And it's, it reflects to me, I think, what their personal desires are. Some of these harken back to another time, like when participation in school sports didn't cost fees. And or another person said, I'd buy a musical instrument for every child that wanted to learn to play. Well, that didn't used to be a huge issue either. It is now. So it is sort of pointing to some of this as I liked how it was before. But I think a lot of it is not nostalgic. It's really pointing to, you know, the person who said I'd pick a single university and pay off the student loans. He's pointing to what's possible when you're not, you know, going to bankrupt before you're 25, you know. These other things are pointing to what's possible with microfunding and starting the entrepreneurs and the innovators actually can get money. What's possible when adult education is meaningful? And so I challenge the notion that the average American doesn't think there aren't worthwhile investments in this socioeconomic world of ours. I don't think most average Americans actually separate social and economy because the economy does not exist outside of society. It just doesn't. And so to not look at the socioeconomic response to, you know, Albertsons is going to close no matter how much the neighborhood needs it because it doesn't care what the neighborhood needs. It only cares about its profitability and then not even profitability of that store but of all stores, right? Or sure, I'll run your fire department as long as there's money in it for me, and as soon as the taxpayers aren't willing to pay for it, well, I'll walk. Business just does not have the same event horizon as government, and so I always resist when people say a human being shouldn't do this or there's different roles for you and me, the individual, the corporate personhood, and the government. It's just different. And I saw a lot of calls to activism in the post that we got. In other words, I can contribute to homeless shelters. I can work for Meals on Wheels. I can. And there's certainly a great amount of personal philanthropy that goes on. But I don't understand the notion or the fear. Why did it engender so much fear to think that we might decide to solve some of these problems in the commons, which would mean collecting from everybody to contribute to the many, right, to create something of value for us all? And the strangest thing to me about this is the immediate defense of corporations and how they've earned their money and they get to keep it. One person even posted that, well, you know, money in the bank is money that secures loans, so it, you know, contributes to the cash flow of society. And the truth be told, most of this money is not in an American bank. So, it's, you know, it's not like Apple has money at home.
and going back to George's point, too, you know, about money being manure, you know, every dollar that we have sitting in a bank has been loaned out nine times.
Nine times.
So it's all fiat money anyway. So, you know, so again, you know, it gets back to, you know, what is it that we actually want to do? I'm hearing education come up a lot, both on the Bridge the Divide group and in doing, and then there was another place that you saw. And, of course, that's my passion right now. I'm working on another project where I can see a direct connection between a lack of education and literacy and an increase in prison population. it's almost like we've created this pipeline that goes from failed education systems straight to prison. And you know, that's just not a culture I want to live in.
Not how we would identify our culture. This is not what we would say American society counts on the incarceration of the many. You know, mm-hmm. and everybody knows the statistic. We incarcerate more people in the United States than in the entire rest of the world combined.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
and,
I know.
And
a lot of that's due to, well, I was just going to say a lot of that's due to, you know, criminalizing drug use and mental illness at this point.
Well, not just that. It's just criminalization is profitable. How many states are turning to contractor operated prisons? I mean, I got to tell you, in the 70s and in the 80s, everybody thought the coolest thing in the world to do is to go build a new jail or go build a new prison, and they had all kinds of ballot measures for bond measures to fund these jails and prisons. And this, the number of jails and prisons or beds in jails and beds in prisons that go empty is astounding because they funded the construction of the infrastructure, the building itself, without projecting or hiding the projection of what it would cost to operate them. So as long as you've got a criminal justice system that's operating the way it's operating now, then we're going to have huge demand. Well, guess what? Industry, private industry, got us to build them the jail. So that's not even their overhead. And, you know, the minute this isn't profitable, away will go the jail keepers. When it's not profitable, away will go the private firefighters. When it's not profitable, away will go, away will go, away will go. And so we're sort of trapping ourselves in this funny little place where business and industry can run the country better. Like one prospect was, Microsoft should run all the schools in America because they know what the future holds. Seriously, dude? But it's actually in the conversation. It's in the conversation. And so I can't believe anyone who's ever owned a business could honestly say, 40 years from now, I'm still going to be providing education for you. 40 years from now, I'm still going to be providing jail services for you or prison services for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, seriously, the money morphs. It follows opportunity. It follows profitability. And the more we humor that joke by saying, oh, but today in this little fragment of time, I can do a better job than government. We're just asking for it. And what we're being educated about with the talking points and the TV ads and all the other things, what we're being educated to believe is if I earn this money, it's mine. Which is addressed to human beings, right? I mean, and so then because corporations are people, then if the corporation earned the money, it's mine. And, you know, I mean, it's just this terrible, vicious cycle of pulling out of any responsibility or accountability for our socioeconomic system and going for this kind of renegade, rogue, anarchist, survival of the thinnest BS that never took us anywhere except to war.
So, Janine, did you already share with people your Apple, the information you found out about Apple?
Well, you know, I might have said it when I wasn't being heard. I wasn't sure. I didn't know about that breakdown, but sure. I mean, the truth be told is Apple has more money than the United States Treasury, and they have so much money. I think $144 trillion, I should grab that number again. But the point is that their shareholders had to sue them to get it. They said, hey, that's not your money. That's our money. In theory, that's what we invested. And so there's a several-year payout project that Apple's now involved in. But, you know, not all of that money is in America. The shareholders are only getting their dividends are going to go up from like $2.60 a share to $3.10 a share or something like that. These are wild-ass numbers, but they're close. And it's happening because it really actually wasn't their money to keep. So either invest it, put it in the cash flow of the nation and the world, or hand it out to the shareholders. Now, I want to point out to you, though, one of the things I've learned, or a trick I was taught that was learned because of Apple was this. Lots of times you'll hear the don't tax the corporations. All these great things are going to happen if we stop taxing corporations, right? They're supposedly paying 35%. They're really only paying 12%. And the globals, frankly, are paying in single digits because of their ability to hide money offshore, right? And so they keep saying, do that, do that, do that. But what they forget is the economic theory from which the idea that corporations are not taxed, from which that is derived, the countermeasure is that dividends and earnings from shareholders should be taxed as ordinary income. So if you tax the earnings as ordinary income, then it would be fine not to tax the corporations. But the truth is the corporations are not paying. Given their level of skin in the game, they're not paying. And then the shareholders, because we supposedly want to encourage investment, they're not paying according to their skin in the game. So they've got a ceiling of 15%. You know, and the effective rate depends on how much stock you have. So it could be less than 50%, 15% your effective rate. So, again, we have all of these things going on as though the economy existed independently of our society. So when there are sociological, societal outcomes based on the economic strategy we choose, the people over here on Wall Street go, that's not our problem. That's not us. We're the economy, you're society, go do something. So as soon as we try to sort of have government be the intermediary in that, then there's all these accusations of communist, socialist, and libtard. I'm tired of that one. I'm a business person. I'm trying to make economic sense out of this transaction. And I promise you, if you know what I know about money and the economy, it's not panning out. This is a scam.
Yeah, I am. One of the things that we keep talking about shareholders, and I really want to like bring us back to stakeholders, because it's more than just the shareholders of the company that have a stake in that company's success. And it affects whole communities and their workers. And it's just a bigger way to look at it if we actually honor the stakeholders and not just the shareholders.
All right. Right. I mean, stakeholders are all of us. Stakeholders acknowledges that an economy occurs within a society. And all the financial anarchists that want us to say, it's my money, you got no business touching it, I could say, get off my road. Hang up your phone. Go beat your clothes on a rock, because the electricity, even though a private company might control that now, who electrified America? The government. Who put phone to America? The government. Who builds the infrastructure and maintains the roads and the bridges and the whatever? The government. Now, is that so bad that the government should have a job, you know, besides fighting wars or making sound bites on CNN? Huh?
And going back to the question that I asked earlier, you know, how do we measure government success? So is it, you know, you've talked a lot about, you know, is this government is for the long-term visioning? And and for things that, you know, private industry is only interested in for the sake of profit, and then they're gone. So, you know, how would we identify those things that government should be doing for all of us, and how would we measure its success?
Well, isn't that the interesting catch-22? Because, again, when we just ask the question, if you had manure money, how would you use it? And we find all these things that contribute to the well-being of individuals and the well-being of cities and the well-being of our society, right? We see all of that. And then we have this other tug, which is like, well, that's all great until someone has to pay for it. But I'm not sure exactly what the breakdown is in terms of why in relative to your skin in the game does it make sense to people, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously Apple has a lot more to lose than I do, you know, if things go awry here. Exxon has
Absolutely.
A lot more to lose than I do. You know, the CEOs and the boards of directors and all of those people, the 1% has a lot more skin in the game and a lot more to lose if this society breaks down. And yet, somehow, we're emasculating them to have them actually contribute to the society that is the garden within which the manure is thrown and their seeds flourish, you know? So
mm-hmm.
I am confused. I am confused about why. I guess they could get to a point where they don't need us anymore, as though they never did, and I don't understand it. Because you know what? There are hungry people. There are homeless people. There are people who sincerely have been looking for work for years. You and I, Debbie Lynn, live in the Silicon Forest.
Mm-hmm.
We know what it's like for people to go from making six-digit incomes to being on unemployment until it expires. Right? And it's
mm-hmm.
not that they're too proud to do other jobs, and it's not all this other hokey-pokey that we get fed. Americans are good people. They want to work. They want to contribute. They want to take care of themselves and each other, take care of their families. And all of this rhetoric that says otherwise is, I just think it's not only unpatriotic, I just think it's treasonous. I should stop there.
you're getting some agreement in the chat room over here, having a nice conversation there. I want to hear what other people do if they were to spread the money and manure around. What do they want to see grow or change? And we've got a couple people listening online. I'm going to encourage you to push one so that we can hear your opinions. There are a couple of regular callers, and would love to hear from you. I turn it back to you, Janine.
Oh, well, most excellent. So, again, every time I flip back to join the Coffee Party movement or bridge the divide or the rant, I see more and more people saying, if I had this manure money, I would do things that nurture our society as a whole by nurturing individuals specifically. And that, I think, is a piece of the conversation that always gets left out when we're talking the economy. It is a socioeconomic phenomenon. It is not just a social phenomenon. It is not just an economic phenomenon. And I think while in theory you can separate the two, in reality they are so intimately linked that we have to then have the conversation, how in this socioeconomic environment can we accomplish the things that nurture individuals specifically and that in such a way that they can be a constructive and meaningful component of the whole. So there's my thing. I see we of course now running out of time since we had so much dead air. I have two callers. I'll go to them. I'll go to 781 first and then to 620. 781, welcome to Lunch with Loudon.
Hi, Janine. It's Kathleen.
Oh, Kathleen, hello. Hello.
How are you?
I'm good now that you can hear me.
Yeah.
And wondering what you have to say about this.
Oh, this has been a great show. And thank you for all the posts you put up, all the reading. I didn't get through it all, but everything you posted was wonderful with just a different slant. And it was fantastic. So kudos. Inherited a lot of wealth, would do philanthropy around a lot of the same issues that people have already cited. So I won't duplicate what other people have said, but the way I look at it after reading some of the comments on Facebook is that if you turn the equation around, and you say, if the wealth were more evenly spread, I mean, not saying we all are on a level financial playing field. That, of course, is unrealistic and ridiculous. But if these people that, you know, think, well, it's my money, I'm keeping it, if they invested back into the community, like I would do if I, you know, came upon some wealth, that the average people would be able to decide where to put that money. In other words, if they want to support the school programs like music and arts and sports, or if they want to support small businesses, they'd have money to spend on those small businesses. You know, environmental work, you know, technology, startup companies, you know, across the board. People would have the money to say, this is what I value. I don't care what corporations value. I care what I value. You know what I mean?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean, because you're really talking about what I was talking about when I said government has an event horizon that should be 100 years, 200 years, 400 years out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would, and you as a citizen have a right to say what direction this boat is heading, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then the other part of it is on business absolutely has the right to make its own calls. Business has the right to succeed. Business has the right to fail. What I think they don't have is the right to pretend that they're not on the boat with us.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how you function in a society thinking that you're above that society. I guess now we can see how, you know, how that is. You know.
It's true.
Even though we don't have explanations from people. I'd love to present that to, you know, the people who have, you know, say a billion plus, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Come live like an average person, and then you talk to me about, you know, not raising the minimum wage and, you know, cutting people's health care and blah, blah, blah. You know, the whole nine yards. If they lived like a middle-class person, they'd get a dose of reality.
Yeah. I think you're right on with that, you know. I mean, last year, the U.S. Boasted over 400, it was actually 422 in March of last year, billionaires.
Yeah, I saw that.
Billionaires are the new millionaires, and moochers are the new everyday guy, you know. Moochers are the new middle class, and I just think that that's, again, a socioeconomic phenomenon.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
You cannot separate one from the other. You just can't. And I think that people who want to are kidding themselves. They're kidding themselves. So because you gave me the perfect opening, I want to remind people that there is an extensive number of posts on the Facebook page, Lunch with Loudon, and we put those there ahead of time before our shows so that people can do some homework. I strive to put many, many, many points of view, and so that people can see, you know, how lots of different people think about the subject. So if, whether you're listening live now or whether you're going to stream this later, I encourage you to check it out and see what you think about all those posts and comments. Kathleen, thank you so much for calling in. I'm opening 620. Welcome to Lindsay Loudon. We
Jack,
have about 2 minutes.
Goldie,
hi, Jack.
Me.
I can. Thanks, Jack.
You can or cannot?
I can.
Cannot? You can.
No, I responded affirmative.
Okay.
I can hear you.
Okay. Just want to let you know that I'll be the first to know that I paid off my debt to Pioneer Manor. And I'll be rejoining your show on joining your group on next month.
Well, congratulations, Jack. I know that that was a big deal for you, and I'm glad that it all worked out. Thank you very much. We always look forward to your participation.
Yeah, okay. And just let me have an opinion here that it's very easy to be, much easier to be against something like the Tea Partiers and a lot of the Democrats than to be for something. I just don't know the philosophy. Whatever you're against, it's easier to be against, be negative, than to be positive. Think about
well,
that.
That's a wonderful point, Jack, because, you know, what we saw on the Facebook pages today and out there in the blogosphere was a very positive response to, this is what I would do with this manure money. I would do the arts. I would do sports. I would do adult education. I would feed the hungry. I would home the houseless. House the homeless. And so I think that's very refreshing, and I think that you reflected that beautifully.
And I really could say
thanks for calling in, Jack. We've got 2 minutes left, and I have a few announcements to make. One is to remind you that our Blog Talk Radio show schedule is 4 deep these days, Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, Progressive Politics Tennessee Style with Bud Fields, Mondays, 9 p.m. Eastern, Press 1 for Democracy with Dan Aronson, Thursdays, 3 p.m. Eastern, that's noon for all us folks on the Pacific Northwest, Lunch with Loudon, Janine and Debbie Lynn, and Saturdays, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, at Politics 10 Riot with Egberto Willis. Coffee Party USA is a totally crowdfunded organization. Citizens United has not benefited us. To become a voting member or to donate, go to www.coffeepartyusa.com. You can join for as little as $5 a month or $30 a year or as much as you like. So I'm still looking for that $10,000 membership, but who knows? It could happen. It could be you. So, Debbie Lynn, it's been a good show. How do you feel? Do you feel resolved now about your post?
I am glad that people are starting to talk about what the actual question was instead of just getting blindsided by the talking points and the use of language. So I am so glad that we were able to do this show today and actually find out what is it that people want to invest in, because that's the big question.
Exactly. And it warmed my heart to see what people really would do with that manure money. So thank you, everyone. We'll see you here this time next week, hopefully with no technical breakdowns. 12 noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. Coffee party on.
Oh, I'm supposed to hit music now, and I'm in the wrong place. There we go.
Aloha.